Mr. Connor is a registered representative and managing principal with Connor Wealth Management. Securities offered through Commonwealth Financial Network, member FINRA, SIPC. Opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, its guests, and callers, and not those of WLVL, its management, staff, or sponsors. Nothing contained in this program should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security, and if applicable, only after the prospectus has been read and understood by the customer. These decisions can only be made after consideration of an investor's investment objective and the investment suitability.
Good morning. It is Ask the Pro with Eric Connor of Eric Connor Wealth Management here in Lockport. And we've got a pretty decent day going right now in the Lockport area and around Niagara County. And so let's welcome Mr. Connor in this morning. Hello, Eric.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing wonderfully, actually. Peachy, you might say.
Yeah, well, I like that I don't stress you out as much as prior hosts when I come walking in at 12 or 13 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're just like, yeah, I knew you'd be here.
Yeah. I was relaying to Eric Cook, who just left after his Tradio show this morning, and I said there was only one time that I know of that Eric Connor was late by maybe 10 or 15 minutes. Do you remember about 2 years ago you got stuck behind the train?
No, it wasn't the train. It was when they were paving down at the corner, and I did not know that they were paving. And so I'm, you know, on my normal schedule, I'm trying to get here, and they had the road completely closed from both directions. And I'm like, how do I get to the station? They're like, I don't think you do. So
crawling through the back 40 off of Trowbridge Street or something? Or?
Actually, it's maybe not the greatest thing, but I snuck through on the backside and drove up the shoulder of the road.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No one, you know.
Yeah.
No one gave me a ticket or anything.
Oh, well, that's good to hear.
They were done at that end, just to be clear. I wasn't doing anything completely dangerous. They just hadn't opened that section back up.
Gotcha. So there is another Ask the Pro person on WLVL that did get stuck behind the train. And I can't remember whether it was Ken Kerbs or whether it was Melissa Dunlap from the
Historical
Society. But it's like, you know, the way the train tracks are run through the city, you can't go anywhere to get around it.
Yeah, all you can try to do is find what direction it's coming and go to the end.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that just might make you go further and further away.
So anyways, it is great to have you with us this morning, and welcome again to Ask the Pro with Eric Connor here.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah. So I know you probably have an agenda, a list of things that you want to discuss financially this morning. Can I just go ahead and throw something out to you that we heard yesterday?
Well, that you can throw the phone number out too.
433-1433 is the number to call. Eric is here to take your questions financial and give you some guidance along the way. We had John Percy with us yesterday morning during Wake Up Niagara. And as you know, he is the president and CEO of Destination Niagara USA.
Yeah.
And it's the first time we had him with us during the morning show. And he told us, obviously, question, how has the tourism industry been for Niagara County this summer, this year? And he had some great numbers. He said things are way up. Obviously, they're clobbering last year because virtually everything was shut down. But compared to 18 and 19, the numbers are in really great shape, to the extent that hotel occupancy rates during the weekdays are up in the upper 80%.
Wow.
And on weekends, high 90s, and a lot of places are reporting full capacity on weekends, 100% capacity for the hotels. Restaurants are doing well, and so that was really encouraging. A lot of people are coming back to Niagara Falls and to Niagara County. So,
yeah, I think just anecdotally, I think if they really dug into it, I think you'd find that it's a lot of what used to be known as a day tripper, right? Someone who climbed in their car and drove in, because the part that's probably still not happening to any real extent are the charters coming in. You know, they're mm-hmm. in prior years, there have been chartered planes that come in from Europe and from Asia to hit Niagara Falls and Toronto, Buffalo, that sort of thing. And I'm sure you're not getting that business back in the area yet. Or if it is, it's incredibly limited, I would suspect. Because with the border closed, you wouldn't have some of that, the real desire. You know, if you're over in Europe and you can only see half of Niagara Falls, as an example. So I think what you're seeing probably are the people that are driving in from a few hours,
mm-hmm.
and they're occupying the hotel room, right? They're not doing it in one day. They're saying, well, okay, well, we'll stay here a couple days, and we'll see more than just stare at the falls for 5 minutes, and we'll go do other things, whether it's Old Fort Niagara or come to Lockport for the locks and that sort of thing. And that is fantastic, and I hope they get a lot of survey data from it and find out, really, where are they coming from? Have they been here before? What's changed? What's their goal of coming here? And that's how you can really then take what John Percy has had as a goal for so long, how you can get them here and keep them longer. That's always been the number one challenge of the tourism in the area is, it's not the sheer quantity of people coming to Niagara Falls and Niagara County. It's how can we keep them here longer, get them to the wineries, get them into the restaurants, keep them in the hotels. That's how you really start to develop even more and more and more opportunity for the tourism and travel business that is so vital in this area, you know, It even rolls over into the other things that you hear about, whether it's fishing competitions or whatever in Lake Ontario. It's not always the same travel people, of course, but it's getting the name out there and getting that business to come in. And then you'll see more development. You'll see eventually more travel perks as it relates to our travel options heading out. You might get more flights to more destinations. You might get an operator that moves into Niagara Falls again and flies more often. So it can be a lot of good news that builds on itself. That's fantastic to know that they are hitting numbers that they really like compared to 2018 and 2019. That's really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a good sign for the area. And let me ask you this, Eric. Now, as far as I know, travel into the United States from Canada is still banned, correct? They moved that into September 21st, I think. But the Americans or U.S. ability to go into Canada is what opened up a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, you could say that if you're one of the people that were sort of landlocked going over to your cottage in Crystal Beach or something like that, you now have the freedom to get over there and you can get back. You're a U.S. citizen. They'll let you back in. And if you've got a family situation, a binational family situation, you can get over and come back, and you weren't able to do that before. And now you did have work exceptions, and now that's eased up a little bit as well. So you don't have out-and-out tourism in the basic sense, but you do at least have some ability to get over and back if you've got a viable reason to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got clients that have property in Shirkston where, you know, for 16 or 17 months or longer, depending on when they were there the prior time as it relates to winter of 2020, they might not have seen their cottage for 18 or 20 months prior to this border reopening. And they were very nervous about what condition they would find their property in. And so being able to get over and check on it, check on such a valuable asset, clean it up, make arrangements for someone to keep an eye on it again when you're gone, that's all been really important. And, you know, not to speak of the social side for families that haven't been able to visit with each other. So, yeah, all good news. It's not 100% open to your point, but improving.
Right.
Improving.
Right. So wasn't it just a few months ago that the Canadian government determined that they were going to impose a tax levy on U.S.-owned properties? This was before the border opened to go into Canada again. And it's like, wait a minute. It's you that are telling us we can't go to our properties, but yet now you're going to impose a taxation on us because we can't maintain our properties?
Yeah, I don't know if that ever came to pass
or if
they modified it, but it did seem fairly punitive that was going to be their mindset of like, well, you're derelict in taking care of your properties. And of course, to your point, you kind of throw up your hands and you're like, well, wait a second. I'm not ignoring my property. I'd love to come take care of it. The governments are telling me I can't. So, yeah, I don't know what the final outcome on that was, but it did appear to be a completely ridiculous idea at the time that it was presented.
Yeah.
Although I will say, in circumstances away from pandemic times, there are lots of examples of governments taxing or treating out-of-towners differently. And a great example is down in Florida. If you're a resident of Florida, you have some nice tax perks in how little your house can be raised, how quickly the assessment or the tax can get raised on your house if it's your primary residence, where that's waived for all the people that are not residents of Florida but own property down there. So in essence, you're getting to penalize the out-of-towners. There's also a thing called a homestead exemption, which is about lawsuits and protecting the asset. That's a different scenario as well, but that's another way that the citizens of an area can be protected or benefit in a way that the out-of-towners do not. So the problem that Canada made in that sort of presentation or in that idea of bringing it up is you're doing it at the time of a pandemic when it's completely out of control, out of the hands of the people that you're penalizing. So,
yeah. 433-1433 is the number if you'd like to jump in and have conversation with Eric Connor. He's our financial expert, and he would love to tackle a question or two from you if you'd like, or maybe a comment. 433-1433. Eric, when it comes to the Canadian and U.S. border, let me ask you this now. When the border opens up fully, 100%, and there's not ridiculous restrictions on this, that, and the other thing, do you see the international travel, tourism coming back from, let's say, Toronto down to Niagara Falls for a weekend or for the week? And the reason I'm asking this, I did spend a number of months working at the outlet mall in the town of Niagara many years ago. And one of the things that impressed me about that was when they had the tour buses come down from Canada, down from Toronto and Hamilton and other places, they were filled with tourists from around the world. And, you know, they came to shop. And you got into conversation with them, and you got to meet some really neat people from around the world, all different ethnicities and all different countries represented. But the point is that they decided to go to Canada, to Toronto, as like a landing spot, and then came down into New York State, down into Niagara County. And are we going to see that again, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know how much from the international side we'd see it. Certainly, Toronto's a fantastic airport from an international flight perspective. So that's what you would have seen in the past. I don't know, sort of if you think of where the world's at right now, I don't know that you're going to get too many people that are flying in that have that, I'll say, idle time to go shopping in that way. But that's just me guessing at it. But I absolutely think you will see the true Canadian shopper return, whether it's to the Galleria Mall or to the Outlet Mall. That's their two destinations. And they do. I like, for someone like me who I hate to shop, I truly hate to shop, I'm forever fascinated, and I'm saying this, John, you'll appreciate this. My wife is currently traveling to a mall as we speak, and I did tell her she could listen to the show while she's traveling with my kids.
Well, certainly.
So she might be listening and currently wondering what I'm going to say, but I can't believe that people will travel into the U.S. to do that shopping, and that they'll actually get a hotel room so that they can shop again the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do not get any joy out of shopping in that fashion. I can't imagine paying for a hotel room so that I can do more of it tomorrow. But that's where our community, in terms of county sales tax revenue, really picks up extra dollars, is from that Canadian, you'd almost call them a Canadian shopping tourist.
Mm.
It's good for bed tax, which is now partially what's funding the Discovery Shuttle around Niagara County and around Lockport, doing great transportation for people. And it's great for our sales tax dollars. And so I think as you get that reopen, as the border reopens, you'll absolutely get those Canadian shoppers to come over. It'll be good for retail sales. It'll be good for the hotel business. And obviously, if you're traveling in from out of town, you've got to go eat somewhere. And so it's also excellent for the restaurant business in those areas. So, yes, I think it'll open up. Yes, I think we'll probably be pleasantly surprised at how quickly that happens. You'd have to think there's, even in the age of internet shopping and e-commerce, I don't know, if you got to buy a pair of shoes, don't you want to try them on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of in-person shopping that is just better than buying it on whatever website, your favorite website. I won't even name them, but what, you know,
yeah.
There's just certain parts of shopping that are better in person. And I think there will be a bit of pent-up demand for that. And even better if it's to happen before the Christmas shopping season. And so you'd see things that are already different points in the economy or in the stock market where certain kind of companies are having fantastic sale results right now. Dick's Sporting Goods did earnings and revenue numbers that were very good within the last couple of weeks. And it's a mixture of apparel and equipment. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you can get Canadian shoppers coming across, I would say that that's absolutely the type of store that would benefit. You know, sometimes they'll come across for their hockey equipment or their footwear because it's just plain cheaper here.
Yeah.
And so they go to the big stores, and sometimes you can actually see that already being rewarded in the results that they're giving us in the stock market every 3 months when they report revenue and earnings and where sales are, what division they're in, what area segment they're in, I should say. So, you know, the Canadians aren't going to come over and buy cars, but they're gonna come over and spend their money in ways that are beneficial to our community, and we should definitely welcome that day when it when it finally comes back.
Right. Interesting that you mentioned that. It was shortly after the pandemic started, and businesses were told to close, and things were in the malls were pretty much shut down because of
precautions.
The precautions, right. So I remember reading an article. It was the manager at the Galleria, and I think also it was echoed by the management people at the outlet mall here in the town of Niagara that in recent years, 75% of their crowd were Canadians. In other words, 25% of locals were supporting those two shopping facilities, but the bulk of their business was coming from the Canadian shopper. And I do know that over the years, the fluctuation of the differential in the value of the dollar versus the Canadian dollar or the loonie, where we don't hear much of that anymore, or we haven't for a while. Where do we stand with that?
I think we only hear it when it's actually in one of its periodic changes. So the Canadian dollar typically strengthens against the U.S. dollar when commodity prices are good, when oil and copper and gold have rallied. That's good for the Canadian economy, and the dollar, the Canadian dollar often strengthens against the U.S. dollar at that time. But I think in terms of us hearing about it, we only hear about it once it's strengthened, or we only hear about it as it's weakening. And so if you've kind of hit a period of time where it's fairly level, shall we say, we stop hearing that as an excuse. So, Yeah, the Canadians, the reason they come over is because there's a tax benefit, the taxation on the product, and the dollar to dollar value when you consider the Canadian to American dollar. So there can be as much as a 20 or 25% benefit to them coming over. And so you'd almost consider it like a binge shopping excursion, right? They are not coming over to spend $10, right? Where we might go and sort of kill time walking around the mall, and maybe we buy something or maybe we don't. If you're one of the out-of-towners that came specifically to the outlet mall, you are going to drop your wallet on the counter and spend some money, right? You are not going back empty-handed. And I think that's maybe where those kind of percentages come up, the 25 to 75% that you were speaking of. I think that's sort of the difference, right, where you can get that out-of-towner to come in, and they're going to spend multiple hundreds of dollars on that one trip, where it's, I'd say, fairly uncommon that a local consumer walking in the outlet mall on any given day is there to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars, right? Like it's just different behavior,
right?
Again, with a logical conclusion, though, the Canadian that's here is here to spend money and whatever, change their wardrobe out, you know, 20% or 50%. You probably have heard the stories that are somewhat comical and somewhat crazy, where they will often come over for footwear, and they'll wear the new shoes home, and they'll throw the old ones out. Like, sometimes they even leave them just in the parking lot. They don't even take them to the garbage can.
You know.
But they'll do that so that when they get to the border, they don't even have to claim – they won't claim the shoes because, hey, it's already on my feet. I didn't buy these today. It's I've already had them. So that's sort of an odd situation that arises. They don't really do that with the clothing per se, but with the footwear, they'll do that.
Oh, yeah, there are some that do that.
Yeah.
And what's really cool is when they leave the packaging and the old stuff in the parking lot behind.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just is like, really?
Right. I'm sure there's a garbage can somewhere or a donation spot somewhere you could go to, but
yeah,
they're not too worried about that.
Yeah. We're talking to Eric Connor. Of course, it's the first Friday in the month of September, and so this is Eric Connor of Connor Wealth Management, which is located in Lockport. Over on, did you take a look at that road sign from 2 weeks
ago? I have not yet.
It is definitely Snyder Road.
Well,
it's listed.
Yeah,
so
I'll have to, when I talk to those in power at the town sometime, I'll have to ask them how we're a road at one end and a drive at the other.
Yeah. Anyways, your office is located at
5860 Snyder Drive. And anyone who wants to give me a call at the office, if you're too shy for the radio, 439-1143. And if we're not there to pick up the phone, there's voicemail, and I'll be happy to return the call. And that's happened several times in the past, where someone listens to the show. Maybe they call me at nighttime, you know, well into the evening when I'm not there anymore, and they leave a message, and I give them a call back when we can meet up on the phone, and that's fantastic. And often those calls are something about a Social Security question or a unemployment question, something like that. A little bit of, you know, well, I'm thinking of doing this. What does that do for taxation? Or, you know, is this the right thing to do? And I'm happy to have that conversation. It usually only takes a few minutes. And anyone I can help out in that way, that's fantastic. It's not always about becoming a new client or anything like that. Sometimes you just need someone to bounce the question off of. And if you want to do that with me, that's fine. Give me a call.
Yeah. 439-1143. Yeah, I didn't even write that down.
There you go.
Yeah. Eric Connor here on Ask the Pro on this Friday morning. Give us a call here if you would like to discuss anything on the air. 433-1433. Very similar numbers, but we don't want to get them mixed up here.
Yeah. It is funny because doing the show here for 4.5 years now, I still do stumble over trying to say the phone number myself. So I always leave it to the professionals on in the other studio for saying it.
That's quite all right. And so, Eric, I don't know, did you have some other item on the agenda? Because
The thing we usually hit on the first Friday is we talk the jobs report comes out, as long as we're not on the first or second of the month. And so even where it's only the 3rd of September, they do an actual jobs report for the prior month, and it did disappoint. Below expectations is what you mean, what you sort of decode that disappoint part. Early indications are only 235,000 jobs were added in August. And the expectation was a much higher number because we've been hitting that much higher number. So the expectation was 720,000. I would point out that seems to have COVID written all over it. When you dig into this report, you had some new restrictions around the country. You had levels of cautiousness. You had some additional stress in the system because of natural disasters, whether it's fire or hurricanes. And so you can see that some of that's built into the system as sort of where the unexpected part hit, because the numbers in leisure and hospitality, that's where there was no job creation at all within the month. And that has been the strong point coming out of the worst of the pandemic, is jobs going into the hotel business, the airline business, the travel business, theme parks, and into restaurants. And so for them, when we know, right, we know in Lockport there are help wanted signs on every restaurant in town. So when you think of the national number as not filling those jobs, well, that's a pretty quirky outcome for the entire month. And so you'd sort of have to think, one, that data is definitely going to get amended in the future. They've added jobs to the June and July report to the tune of a couple hundred thousand. So I would suspect we'll see that August gets refined like that in the future. But the other part is, how are those jobs continuing to not be filled, right, nationwide? Not just locally, but nationwide. And so that becomes the big question of the day, and it builds into a different data point in the report, which is salaries or income continue to go up at a healthy clip. So the data from August is that income was rising at a 4.3% annual rate, and that's pretty good. For what we've seen over the last decade or so, that is a pretty healthy clip. And we know that the help wanted ads and signs are showing higher figures per hour than we've ever seen, and it does not relate to a minimum wage. It is simply the places need to fill those jobs. And the news report that came out just yesterday, I want to say it might have been Wednesday, I might have lost track of the day already, was that Walmart was raising over they're raising their hourly wage by a dollar. I want to say it was 53,000 workers, but maybe it was even more than that, are getting a dollar an hour raise to $16 an hour at Walmart nationwide. So that sort of pressure has nothing to do with a minimum wage. It is an issue of keeping and trying to attract employees. And so if you've got Walmart continuing to raise the amount they're willing to pay, you'll keep seeing that pressure in the system. Now, as we get here into the beginning of September, one of the big talking points for months and months and months has been about the enhanced unemployment. That's now gone. It's over. This is the end for that. And so you're back on only having whatever the state you're living in offering. And so for the people that had been pretty firm on the idea that, well, when people are staying home because of the enhanced unemployment, when the unemployment ends, we'll see those people come back into the workforce. My statement had been over the months, if that was how someone was actually behaving sitting at home, don't wait till the end. because you want to be able to have your pick of the job, right? You want to be able to have the job that fits your skill set or your schedule or your capabilities in the best way. So don't wait till the end. Don't wait until your unemployment actually runs out. What we're seeing in the states that actually did cut off benefits early, and John, I think you and I might have had this as a little conversation a couple months ago, not on the air, but I think we might have talked about it. In the states that cut off the enhanced unemployment early, they have not seen any boost in job creation. They have not seen any magical decline in their unemployment number. So it is really starting to confuse the economists out there and the behavioral economists out there in understanding how we can have 10 million job openings and we have people that are unemployed, and yet we're not matching up unemployed people with the job openings. And as you raise wages and still don't fill those job openings, you can see that that becomes a very strange and difficult problem for companies to fill their job requirements, job needs. So whether it's the restaurant who can't stay open as long as they want because they don't have enough workers, but it also is trickling into the mid-tier positions where you might call them semi-skilled, right? You don't need a college degree. You don't need a vocational training, but you do need a head on your shoulders and you need a little bit of experience. Even those jobs are seeing some wage pressures in the $20 and $25 an hour positions climbing higher. The only real answer to that is for a business to get more technologically savvy, more flexible with their workforce, whether it's hybrid work hours, work from home, whatever, but also eventually it will force them to get more, computerized on whatever level they can. If they can take a position and make it so that the person is twice as productive because of machinery, or if they can replace a human with a computer or a human with a robot, that's eventually what they'll do. And so it is sort of an interesting situation for the economy of how are we filling these jobs? Where are we finding the people? It really does seem to be a problem of how do you find the people right now?
Yeah. So in the big picture, is it possible that this effect of raising wages just to obtain and retain current employees, it's going to squeeze the bottom line of the companies to the point where perhaps they have to call it quits? And then we're back to square one, where you've got, let's say, 25 people, no matter what the wages were, that the company no longer exists, so they're out of work again.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be true in some cases. I don't know how prevalent the out-of-business part is. I think the traditional belief would be to look at two things. One would be how capable is the business able to raise their prices, right? They just make their pizza more expensive, as an example, or raise the price of their hamburger or raise the price of their automobile, whatever. Or does the business eat the cost and just operate under a lower profit margin? And the scenario that we are starting to find ourselves in is that the companies definitely do have some pricing power. And what that term pertains to is that they do have the ability to raise their prices a little bit. And of course, we know that as inflation. So the big question is, if they raise their labor cost, call it a 5% raise, are they raising their prices by 5% or are they only raising them by 3%, right? And so that ends up becoming sort of a difficult radio conversation, but it ends up meaning with their increases, do they become more profitable or do they become less profitable? Mm-hmm. And so as the part always concerns me on my side of the world for investment purposes, you get growth in the stock market when you've got increasing earnings. If you've got a situation where you're going to have profit pressure, potentially with less earnings, that will create weakness in the market. And so it doesn't necessarily mean the entire market at one time. You can have that pricing pressure in an area. Sort of a different way to look at it in this very moment in time is the trouble that the auto industry is having with their semiconductor shortage. Their sales are going down terribly, not because of a lack of demand, but because they cannot create the product, the finished automobile. They cannot create enough of the finished product so that people will buy them. And so Ford released their sales numbers a couple days ago. Their sales were down 33%.
Wow.
And again, not because they have bad cars or bad product. They are not able, they're not physically capable of building those cars right now because of shortages in the parts industry, specifically the semiconductors, which we've talked about over time. That's the same sort of scenario that you get with the salary increases. Do you end up in a better situation as for the company or a worse situation? And, you know, again, for me, it's, are we driving profit higher or are we creating a lower profit situation? And that's ultimately where the valuations change. And so you can use it a lot of different ways, right? We could talk Apple. Apple's at a PE, not as high as 6 months ago, but a fairly rich PE multiple, price to earnings multiple for their history. When you go back in time, Apple often was trading at a 13 or 14 or 15 times their earnings. They're currently trading at about 27 times their earnings. They're the most profitable company on earth. That's sort of why they've gotten that holy blessing, so to speak, that in this environment with reasonably low interest rates, people are willing to pay up for those earnings because Apple so consistently provides that the revenue and earnings that they're looking for. Whereas you get other companies, and I'll use General Motors since they're a local employer. General Motors trades at an incredibly low multiple to earnings, and automobile industry is typically like this for any company not named Tesla right now. GM will trade at 5, 6, 7 times earnings. And the reason for that is because they don't have the consistency of year in, year out. They will enter times where they have massive losses during a recession. Just like we've talked in the past, how when the bad times come around for autos, they cut their dividend. Well, they cut their dividend for self-preservation to keep that dollar in their company checking account to pay their bills. So all these different companies have different valuation metrics depending on what they're doing with their profit margins and the consistency. So again, as we talk about the salaries and increases, the companies that can maintain their profit margin, John, mm-hmm. they'll be okay in the stock market. The ones that have a declining profit margin, they see a decline in their stock price because the concern ends up being that they don't have enough control over raising prices to maintain their profitability.
All right. So if a company is entertaining their ability to raise their prices, that does bring in a factor of, and I don't know what the percentage would be, but how many customers are they going to lose because of that price increase? So it's, as I see it, it's kind of a vicious cycle, right?
It can be. It can be, right. There's an issue. It's sort of like renting in a, you know, for maybe so we don't get totally lost in the weeds of certain things. If you think of a price increase for a landlord, right, he's got 12 units. And he wants to desperately, because of taxes or insurance, he wants to raise his rental rates $100 a month. If he's got a waiting list that's 15 people long for his 12 apartments, he's going to raise that.
Yeah.
He's going to raise that cost because he knows there's a huge demand for those units. And so he might lose an existing renter, but he'll replace it with someone off his waiting list. That's maybe an example that works for people. They can sort of understand that better than, you know, again, thinking of a company making some little widget that's really high tech, and we can't understand how they came how they came to invent it in the first place. But it is true in the semiconductor industry right now with the automobile business. The reason there's a shortage of semiconductors in automobiles is because they use very cheap semiconductors. Some of the parts are probably only a dollar or two. But the semiconductor business right now is so good. Why would you make parts that you're going to sell to GM for a dollar or $2 if you can make other semiconductors that you're selling for $20 or $25 or $30, right? There's just no reason.
Right.
It would be like a pizzeria making a $20 pizza versus a $4 garlic bread with cheese, right? Still goes in the oven, occupies the same space. I'd rather sell a $20 pizza than a $4 garlic bread and cheese. So that's where the auto industry finds themselves. They can't get the parts, not because there's an absolute shortage of capacity everywhere, but that what they need is actually not very valuable to the producer. It's very valuable to the auto company, but not to the companies that would be selling it to them. So the solution there, just in case anyone really cares, the solution there is ultimately have more of those chip plants built, have some of them be in the U.S. for national purposes, and then you'd have a better supply chain for the automobile companies. So the challenge there is that semiconductor plants cost billions of dollars. And
takes time.
Takes a very long time. Yeah, you're probably looking at a 3-year creation cycle for to build a plant right now.
Yeah, and the sad part is, as you drive around the area, and I'm not going to be specific with names, but you see some of the new car dealerships, their lots are empty. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
Partially or almost completely empty, and it's a shame that you know, the big manufacturers are not able to get their product out. And I heard somewhere or read somewhere that don't a lot of them have, like, partially built cars, and they can't finish them because of the semiconductors?
So. Yeah, there was a belief that they could build part of the car and wait to finish it off because the parts were coming, you know, kind of like the check is in the mail. I don't think that became a long-standing policy because it just isn't working, right? You can't have 500,000 cars that are partially built. You could do it on 10 cars. You could do it on a couple hundred cars. You can't do it on whole production runs like GM and Ford would really like to do.
Well, GM just announced the Tonawanda plant is laying off 400 workers as of next week.
Yeah, and that's going all over the country, but right, that's the one we're hearing locally right now. But that's it. It's not a lack of demand, but you can't just keep creating engines that aren't going to end up in a car. You don't want them sitting around for 6 months or a year before they end up in a vehicle. So the better choice for the company is to just plain stop producing them in the short term. Yeah, that's a problem. It's also created the very strange quirk that cars from 2018, 2019, and early 2020 are actually going up in value because the fully loaded models they're already produced. And so you can't get a 2021 right now or a 2022 in some of these models. So the used car market has been very strong because they're already in existence, and someone's like, well, I can't get the one I really want, but I'll buy this one from last year, even though it's got some miles on it.
So. Yeah, and Eric, I think it is time to put wraps on this one.
I think so.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation, certainly very informative.
Yeah.
And we've learned a lot from you today, and look forward to our next time in 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks. Everyone enjoy the long weekend if you got it.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing. I want to know when you plan that shopping weekend with your wife.
Oh, no. She gets to do that whenever she wants.
Okay.
I'll enjoy my peace and quiet.
Yeah. All righty. Eric Conner, thanks so much. Again, 439-1143, your office.
Got it.
All right.
Got it.
Thank you. Have a happy Labor Day, Eric. Thank you.
1340 AM and 105.3 FM. WLBL, Lockport. FM translator, W287 CD.